This week's parsha, Parshas Pekudei, is the last parsha in Sefer Shemot, in the book of Shemot. And once again, Parshas Pekudei deals with what we've been dealing with the last number of weeks in Parshas Truma, Tetzaveh, Kitisa, and Vayakel, with the final details, the ideas having to do with the Mishkan, with the tabernacle, and all the details involved in building of the tabernacle. Parsha Pekudei begins that these are the reckonings of the tabernacle of testimony, which were reckoned at Moshe's bidding. As the article Stone Chumash points out, that the Sedra begins with a detailed listing of the amounts of gold, silver, and copper that were contributed to the construction of the tabernacle. Despite the fact that the metals were deposited with Moshe and were under the supervision of Bezalel, people whose greatness and integrity were indisputable were known to the people and attested to by God, Moshe made a full accounting of all proceeds and use of the contributions. He would not rely on any assumptions, for leaders must be beyond reproach and must keep accounts of the funds that passed through their hands. Parshas Pekudei goes through a very detailed accounting of how much gold, how much silver, how much all the materials that were donated, and how exactly they were used in the construction of the Mishkan. And then Parshas Pekudei ends with Ashras HaShchina, the desired result of the God's presence resting down among the people. I'd like to raise really two questions today, and once again try to take two approaches in responding to these questions. The first question is a very broad question, the second much more specific. I think the first question that concerns us, and it's a question that we've been struggling with in each and every one of these parashios, is, okay, I get the point. I get the point we're supposed to build a Mishkan. I get the point that we have all of these details and the beauty in the construction. But are we not but belaboring this point by parsha after parsha after parsha? So the Truma Tetzaveh, which is the command, and Kitisa are some added detail. And then Vayakel is how they put together all those commands, and now Pekudei is the reckoning of how indeed all that was contributed was indeed used for that which it was supposed to be used for. Like this, the word that comes to mind called Genug, enough is enough. Like, you know, you have, for example, the laws of Shechita, which are found by only like almost like a remez, that we learn it out from a phrase in Pasuk of Chumash. And all the laws of Shechita are learned from this, and the Mishkan is just taking up parshios after parshios. So I think our first question is, why? What are we supposed to learn from this? What message is it supposed to teach us? And again, there are many answers. We'll try to take one approach perhaps today. What is the importance, the significance, what we can learn, in particular what we can learn from Parshas Pekudei? In particular, what can we learn from the concept of the reckoning, that a whole parsha is given over just for the reckoning, that it's not mentioned almost as an afterthought in Parshas Vayakel, but we need a whole parsha of Pekudei of reckoning? That's question one. Question two is a more specific question on the first pasuk. First pasuk has redundancy in it, which needs to be explained. And once again, looking at the first verse, these are the reckonings of the tabernacle. Ela Pekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan HaEdos, the tabernacle of testimony, which were reckoned at Moshe's bidding. And this is a famous question that bothers all the commentators. Why is there a repetition in the first pasuk of Ela Pekudei HaMishkan, and then once again it repeats Mishkan HaEdos, the Mishkan of the testimony? Why is Mishkan repeated twice? So we have more of the Kabbalistic answers, that the Mishkan of below is parallel to the Mishkan of above. The concept of Migdash Shamala, Migdash Shamata, that there's a parallel between the sanctuary below and the sanctuary of above, and it's alluding to that. You have Rashi, who, if we take a look in source 3, seems so un-Rashi-like, by bringing a Medrash which says, Midrashically, the two words allude to the two temples, which were taken from us. We know that the concept of the Mishkan and the concept of Mikdash are often interchangeable. So Mishkan is a reference to the two Batei Mikdash, the two temples. In a play on words, Mishkan is pronounced as if it were vocalized as Mashkon, which means a pledge or collateral, and intimates that the two temples are collateral for the sins of Israel, and were taken from us until the nation repents and restored to its former position. Says Rashi, Eilu Pekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan Eidus. So Mishkan is a reference to two Batei Mikdash, the two temples. And playing on the word Mishkan with a different vocalization, Mishkan can be read as Mashkon. These two temples were our collateral, so to speak. We sin. God really deserved to punish us, but completely. But instead of God taking out his wrath on the people, he took it out, as we say, on the sticks and the stones, on a physical building. And in that way, we, so to speak, gave our due to God to forgive our sins. And that's the concept of the Mishkan being a Mashkon, a collateral. Very strange Rashi. In particular, what is this Rashi doing here? I mean, what is the connection between that the temples are going to be a mashkon, they're going to be a collateral to pay for our sins, when we're dealing here with a case of how beautiful a time it is when God's resting his presence on the Mishkan? It doesn't even seem to be appropriate to even bring this medrash in this particular pasuk. How does it all tie in? How does it fit in? So we're back with our same question. We're back with our question of why is Mishkan repeated twice? How are we to understand this Rashi? So in a nutshell, what is Parshas Pekudei teaching us? What's the message of Parshas Pekudei? What's the concept of the reckonings? What's the concept of these two Mishkans, these two tabernacles? I think that both approaches can be alluded to in a Rashi and in Ibn Ezra that are found in source 4, and I think that will be our departure points. Eilu Pekudei HaMishkan, these are the reckonings of the Mishkan, that's idea 1. Idea 2 in the Pasuk is that this Mishkan is a Mishkan HaEidos, a Mishkan of testimony. The second part of the Pasuk is describing the type of Mishkan we're dealing with, to which Rashi notes the following, and it's this Rashi that is indeed, I believe, approach number 1. Rashi says, because the divine presence was upon it, the tabernacle testified that God had forgiven the sin of the golden calf. Then we have the Ibn Ezra, which will be our approach number 2. Alternatively, the testimony refers to the tablets, to the luchos that were a testimony of our relationship with God. Let's go step by step with Rashi. It's a simple Rashi, but I'd like to see the depth and the profound nature of what Rashi is saying here. What is the testimony? What is the Mishkan coming to testify about? It's testifying that the divine presence was upon it, even though we had sinned with the golden calf. Even though we had fallen from our relationship with God, nevertheless, the Pekudei HaMishkan, this Mishkan we're building, is a Mishkan HaEidos, is a Mishkan that's testifying to the fact that God is still among us, although we sit. This idea I'd like to develop, based once again on the teachings of Moshe Shapiro, the book of Mamakim, which we've used extensively throughout this series of Parsha classes. Says Mamakim, we have two experiences in Jewish history where we have God's presence upon us. The experience called Mishkan, the experience called the Tabernacle in the Desert, and the experience called the Batei Mikdash, the experience of the temples that stood in Jerusalem, the first one built by Shlomo, and the second one in the times of Ezra and Nehemiah. What's the difference between them? So he quotes a gorgeous Sheni Shmuel in Source 7. The Sheni Shmuel says the following. Shemikdash, the temple, Nikram Mitzad Yisrael. The concept of Mikdash is really the initiative from the point of view of the Jewish people. Shehem Mitkachim, the concept of Mikdash means to sanctify. They sanctify themselves, the people, V'nivdalim min hachumriyot, and separate themselves from the physicality of this world. V'hu divuk Yisrael lavim shebashamayim mimata lamala. And therefore, it's the case of the divuk, of the connection, of the clinging of the Jewish people to God, mimata lamala, from down here to up above. We take the initiative in the Mikdash, we separate ourselves, and that indeed is what the concept of Kedusha means. Kedusha means the separation where we separate ourselves and we have a relationship with God. What's the Mishkan? The Mishkan nikra misad Hashem yisparach sheshochenim Yisrael v'hu divuk milamala lamata. What is the Mishkan? The Mishkan comes from the word Shechina, to dwell, and that is God taking the initiative, and the process is the process of above to below. Let's try to understand this very briefly. When the temple stood in Jerusalem, it was an experience where people had to prepare themselves in order to meet God in the temple. And it wasn't only a question of Mikdash Kedusha, Kedusha being separation, as we know, where the people had to separate themselves in order to meet God. It was also a place where God himself was separate. It was a place where you really felt the Kedusha Tzamakom, you felt that there's a presence of God resting in this place. It was a place that could be characterized as Yiras Hashem, the awe of God. Where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so separate from this world, but there is a place that you could, at some level, access this relationship with God. It was, if we would put it in simpler terms, a formal structure of meaning between man and God. What's the Mishkan? The Mishkan, based on the Shem Shmuel, says Me'amakim is much different. The concept of the Mishkan is a place where God, Shechina, God takes the initiative and comes down here. And here's the key part, whether we are worthy of it or not. Well, the Mikdash had to be really the initiative of the people. It had to be a place where we take the initiative and meet God. The concept of the Shechina is the concept where God comes down to us no matter where we are. And perhaps this is best represented by the fact that the Mishkan physically is characterized as having moved with the people. The Mishkan traveled with the people for 40 years in the desert. The Mishkan traveled with the people as they were going from place to place within Eretz Yisrael itself. It was in Gilgal, it was in Nov, it was in Kiryat Yarim. The Mishkan moved so many times. The physical moving of the Mishkan is a representation of what's going on a much deeper level, where God is moving with us no matter where we are. Well, the Mikdash is this very formal structure. The Mishkan is a much more intimate structure of kirva, of closeness between ourselves and God. And that's why we know the Medrash tells us on the next page in Source 10, very beautiful medrash of the concept of Shechinta b'galuta, that the Shechina is always in galus. Medrash says that when they went down to Egypt, the Shechina, the divine presence, was with us. We went to Babel, Galula Babel, Shechina imahem. We went to Babylonia, the Shechina was with us. V'askeshem asidim ligal, Shechina imahem. And when we're physically going to be brought back once again, the ultimate redemption, God's Shechina is coming back with us. The concept of God's Shechina means that he always stays with us no matter what happens. God is always with us. If we understand that, if we understand that the Mishkan represents the Shechina of God, the divine presence of God, and it's a presence that moves with us just like that physical tabernacle moved with us. So then we can understand that Rashi of the Mashkon on a much deeper level. He says in source number 11 where the arrow is, U'kishechatu Yisrael lefanav v'nichrav habayim. When we sin and therefore we lost the ability to take the initiative in relationship with God, and therefore the result has to be the destruction of the temple. When we sin and God has to take away this physical structure, it's not only a question that we give God a collateral, take our tabernacles and leave us alone, don't destroy us as a people, but on a much deeper level, God gives us a mashkon, God gives us a collateral. Although I'm destroying the temple, I'm not leaving you entirely. What am I leaving you with? The Shechina. I'm leaving my divine presence with you. I'm leaving something with you that will remind you that I'm not leaving you forever. The Shechina is the presence of God, which is a gift that will always be with us no matter into what level we have reached. So step back 1 minute before moving on. The pasuk is saying something so beautiful. Now that we're at the time, the Parshas Pekudei, where the end of the Parshas we'll see is the Shekhinah of God, the Divine Presence coming down. The Parshas is telling us something very profound. Eile Pekudei Mishkan Mishkan Eidos. Even when the Mishkan, the Batei Mikdash, the temples are going to be destroyed, we still have the Mishkan HaEdus, we still have the testimony that we saw from the fact that God is putting His presence down on us even though we sinned in the golden calf. That's the model, my friends. The model is that God gives us a Mashkon. God gives us a collateral. You've sinned, I have to remove myself physically from among you, I have to destroy the temple, yes! But you know what? I have Pekudei HaMishkan, I'm still going to give you a Mashkon. And that's the concept of the Shekhinah. The concept of the Mishkan is the concept of the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, which never leaves the Jewish people, no matter what. And it's not only a question of never leaving the people on a national level, it's much deeper than that. As he quotes in Source 12, Rav Tzadik HaKohen, that says, that inyan galus hashchina, the fact that divine presence is in galus, is in exile, means that there's an aspect of God shehu shochein b'toch levavot b'nei Yisrael that is found in each and every one of us as individuals. And he says, even though we're found in impurity, afilu b'leiv hamishukam b'chol minei ta'avot v'zuhamah, and we can be involved as individuals in such, having so many desires and in such, in impurity and distance from God, nevertheless, mikol makom chelek Hashem amo, God is still with us. Ve'af al pi shechata Yisrael, hu sharasho davuk hu b'Hashem Yisparach. No matter how much we sinned, as Rav Dessler says in 13, however low a person may have sunk, he never loses that inner spark of spirituality hidden in the heart of Israel. This is a deeper meaning of God's promise never to reject the Jewish people or allow them to become extinct. On a national level, on a personal level, there is always a Shekhinah, always a divine presence that's found among the Jewish people. The Mishkan never is destroyed. This idea that the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, is always there, and no matter what we do in life, we always can connect ourselves to that Shekhinah because that Shekhinah never goes anywhere. It's also alluded to in a very beautiful Medrash. I think we'll take this idea one step deeper. The Medrash says in 15, the Mishkan is built from Atzei Shittim Omdim, these woods of Shittim that are standing. We spoke about these woods a number of parashios ago. Shema Tomard Avan Sivram Vatel Sikuyam Tamud Lomar Atzei Shittim Omdim Sheomdim Lolam Ulamei Olamim. You might think that perhaps, what does it mean, Omdim, that they're standing, there'll come a point where they'll no longer be standing? No. These Atzei Shittim, these Shittim woods will be standing forever. What does this mean? So on one level it means, and we know this to be true, that while the physical structure of the temples were destroyed, the Mishkan physically was not destroyed. It's almost fascinating. What happened to this beautiful Mishkan? Right? We spend so much time talking about it, and what happens? It disappears off the face of the map. So our rabbis tell us, v'hu nignaz v'nitman, it was buried. It was buried whole. It was never physically destroyed, burned, carried away, right? The Arch of Titus, where we see the carrying the menorah, that famous imagery of the Churban, of the destruction. The Mishkan, the sanctuary, was buried as is in the ground. But you understand, my friends, what this is saying. It's saying the point we're making here. The Mishkan can never be destroyed. Atzei Shittim Omdim, these Shittim would constantly stand. They are not going to be burnt up. They're not going to be destroyed because the Atzei Shittim represent the Mishkan, which represents the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence. And it's always with us, my friend. It could be buried. We may not see it, but it's still Omdim. It's still there. But then the Medrash goes a little bit further. The Medrash says in Source 20, and it's a gorgeous Medrash, and it really gives a tremendous depth to what we're saying. minei arazim heim. There are many types of trees. Umekulam lo bachar katuv ela bezeh sheshmo shitim. But of all the trees that were able to be taken, which one did God request to build the Mishkan? Was the Atzei Shittim, the Shittim wood. Translated in English, I think acacia wood. Why? So listen to the Medrash, because it's so beautiful. It says the Medrash, Lefi Shisrael Chatu B'Shittim. We know that the Jewish people sinned in the name of a place which has the same name, Shittim. And that was the sin when Bilam, in his frustration of his inability to curse the people, has a wonderful idea. You send out the women, you entice the men into relationships, and that's what happened. It was the sin of Baal Peor, and 24,000 Jews died in this particular place. So says the Medrash, Lefi Yisrael Chatu B'Shittim, since we sinned in this physical place called Shittim, Laku B'Shittim, and we got punished in this place, V'nitrapu b'shitim, and we are healed with shitim. What does it mean we are healed with shitim? We are healed with the shitim wood of the Mishkan. So what does this medrash mean? So if we understand this, it's such a beautiful idea that Rav Shapiro brings down. He says the word shitim on the next page comes from the Shoresh Shin Tet Hei, which is the concept of moving off of the path, of deviating from the norm, which brings to mind that famous statement of Reish Lakish in 22 of Ein Adam Over Avera Ela Im Kein Nichnas Bo Ruach Shtut. The only time a person will do a sin is if a Ruach Shtut from that same word of Shata, the spirit of folly, comes into him. But suddenly you're overtaken by this crazy wild idea to do something that if you had your full cognizant mind on, you would not be doing this. Every sin is really a sin of shittim. Every sin is a sin of deviating from the path. Every sin is really embodied in the sin of shittim, where we're overcome by desires that we stray from the path. We have sinned in shittim. Shittim, the Medrash is really modeling for us that we all sin in this concept of shittim. Not only that physical place, the conceptual concept of shittim, of moving off the derech, moving off the path. And we get punished because of the shittim. But have no fear, because the shittim nitrapu, we always have the shechina. We always have the atzei shittim ombim. Those atzei shittim, this word, its ombim stands forever. This concept of the Shechina being with us, mitoch tumatam, amidst the impurity, that it travels with us, that's the motto of the Atzei Shittim, that it will never leave us, no matter how we go off the path, we're always connected, we'll always have that Atzei Shittim omdim. Medrash goes one step further and says, where did these Atzei Shittim get this ability to carry us, that the Mishkan should carry us forever? That's the famous Medrash in 25. Umehechan hayu akrashim, where did they get Atzei Shittim from in the desert? Very beautiful Medrash that Yaakov Avinu natau tam b'sha'ashi arad l'mitzrayim. Before, when Yaakov Avinu got to Egypt, he planted these trees in Egypt. Such a wonderful Medrash. He says, Amar l'banav, he says to his children, Atidim atem lihigael mikan, you're going to be redeemed from here one day. V'kadosh Baruch Hu ati lomar lachem mishatem nigalim shetasu lo at hamishkan, and God's going to command you to make a tabernacle. Ela amdu v'natu arazim me'achshav, plant the trees now, so that when he commands you to build that tabernacle, you'll have these trees ready. It's a very powerful medrash. The Emes LeYaakov, Yaakov Kamenetsky, speaks about this medrash in terms of, it was a physical reminder to the people, you will be redeemed. Every time you're going to lose hope in Egypt, look at those trees. It's implanting in them hope for the future. But going back to Rav Moshe Shapiro, he says that the concept of Yaakov Avinu is the concept of the Avos, is the concept of one who was completely connected to God. And what was special about Yaakov Avinu is all of his children were connected to God. While Avram had Ishmael and Yitzchak had an Esav, Yaakov had a Mitato Shlema, all of his children were connected to God. Yaakov planting these trees is Yaakov Avinu planting within the people the fact that you're all connected to God, you all have a relationship with God. Yaakov Avinu almost, so to speak, put into the Atzei Shittim, put into this tree, the image, the model of Yaakov Avinu as Avi Avot HaUma, as like the father of the nation, where all the children, no matter where they go astray, are connected to God. That's the model of the Mishkan, the model of the Shechina, the model of divine presence. No matter where we're at, God is with us. And that's why the end of the parsha, which is such a beautiful ending in Source 28, last verses where the cloud covered the tent of meeting and the glory of Hashem filled the tabernacle. This is really the climax, the drum roll of the entire Sefer, is that when you understand that when you go through the process of building, the end result is to actually be able to physically see the Shekhinah, to physically see the divine presence. So if we were to summarize level number one, and then I'm going to move very much into the world of the practical. What is the relevancy of this parsha? Why are we focusing on it over and over again? Because the concept, according to level number one, is we're not just building a Mishkan. We're not just building a physical structure for God. The Mishkan is something that will be with the Jewish people throughout. Okay, we may not have the physical building, but if we understand that the Mishkan was a place of connection between man and God taking the initiative, the Mishkan that God is Shochein, God dwells, then we understand that when we read these parashios, it's supposed to elicit within us over and over again the feeling that God is still here. The Mishkan is never destroyed. The Atzei Shittim Omdim, those trees still stand. We may be Shotem Min HaDerech, we may deviate, but nevertheless, the Shekhinah, the divine presence, is very much, very much in our lives. Such a focus on the Mishkan, because the Mishkan is alive and well within our own lives. So now, my friends, comes the obvious question. Well, if the Mishkan is alive and well in our own lives, so how do we access it? How do we touch it? How do we make it part and parcel of our lives? How do we take the concept of the Shekhinah, Shara Bisrael, and make it part of my daily routine? So I'd like to suggest two answers. One we've dealt with a little bit in the past, but clearly every time we repeat it with different depth and different understanding, different vantage points. As an introduction to these two levels, I'd like to share a very, very beautiful insight. Very beautiful insight of Rav Aviner in Tal Hermon. Rav Aviner notes that you almost have a beautiful structure in last week's parsha coupled with this week's parsha. And very often we know Vayakel Pekudei are joined together. What does Vayakel mean? It means to bring everyone together. It means the community. It means the general cloud, the general assembly. What is Pekudei about? Pekudei is about the reckonings, about the details. And those are really the balance in life. You need to have the cloud, you need to have the general, but you also need in Judaism and in life to have the Pekudei, the reckonings. The significance of the Pekudei, why do we focus in on going through how much each thing weighed and how it was used? Because life is about details. And the details of the details, you cannot get more specific than this week's parsha in detail. And that's why he says in 30, Shteki Shotein, there are two approaches in life. Hachat Klalit, one is very general, Mufshetin Me'od, very abstract. Osekit Be'idelim, the ideals, Klali'im Erachafim Ba'avir, that float in the air. Aval Chaseira HaYiridala Pratim, but what is missing in that is going down to specifics. These ideals, yordim umitgalim b'mitzuot ha'artzi b'mamashi. You have to take these ideals and actually implement them into the practical. As he quotes a wonderful line, he says, it's like that kumar, it's like that priest, who says that one should love all of humanity, but do not love one single person. That's the balance. This, my friends, is really the balance in life. Right? You can say to a spouse, I love you, I love you, I love you, but who's going to take out the garbage, who's going to pick up the dry cleaning? Life is not only about the wonderful sayings of the klal, of the general. But if all you have is the klal, so then you're never going to be able to form a relationship of the specifics. Life is about having the general, but the general has to be put down into the specifics. You love somebody, it's okay, you'll take out the garbage, you'll pick up the trash. And that's why he says, continuing in 30, he says, Yesh gadlut bagodel, there is greatness in that which is big. Aval yesh gam gadlut bekoten, but there's greatness in that which is small as well. Life is about appreciating the large picture, and life is about being able to focus in on the details. Eilat pekudei mishkan, says Rav Avigner in Tal Charmon, if you need in life to have a parsha about details, because details tell you how the entire thing is able to actually function and work together. But, says Tal Charmon, and this is the key, my friends, don't get lost in the details that you forget the larger picture. Don't, you know, take out the garbage and pick up the dry cleaning and then forget that what? That you love the person. That you want to have a relationship with the person. And that's the danger. How does the parsha end? The Mishkan Nashras HaShchina. You can't lose focus of all the details. You can get so caught up in detail work. Like, ask a kid, why are you in school? I don't know, I'm learning math, I'm learning science. But why are you here? Well, education. You forget the whole picture, what education is about. You're so caught up in tests and assignments. That's how our lives are about, my friends. We get so caught up in the nitty-gritty of life that we sometimes forget the larger picture. Alone, there's a life. We're living this for a reason. There's a purpose to all of this. And he quotes so beautifully. He says, if you don't have this larger picture, so then what you're going to have are pratim yiveshim lelo shorish yinika mimikor idali. He said, if you don't have the larger picture, so then your details become very dry, very stale, and they don't have from where to really give them life and to nurture them. And it just adds, in such a beautiful idea, so I'll add it almost parenthetically. He says, in Yerushalayim, which was a place of tremendous simcha, they had a place outside Yerushalayim, outside the city limits, that you can go and sit and contemplate and meditate. It's important to contemplate and meditate, but you can get depressed contemplating and meditating. So therefore, and Yerushalayim was a place of simcha. You can't be depressed in Yerushalayim. You have to go outside of Yerushalayim to contemplate and meditate. And it's that balance almost, that the contemplating and meditating is necessary, but you can't lose the simcha, you can't lose the joy, you can't lose what life is all about. If we understand this, that life is about the general, the specifics, which are really drawn from a general idealistic concept, so now we can understand on two levels how we can access the Shekhinah in our life. On one level, Rav Dessler in Strive for Truth, where Hashem planned and created the universe as a vast organism with all its multifarious parts working perfectly in conjunction. The whole of creation serves a purpose, the revelation of God's glory to His creatures. There can be no greater loving kindness than this. God's glory is revealed to a human mind. Each time someone looks in wonder at the stars, each time faced by a moral choice, someone chooses the good in honor of God. Each time the hand of God is seen in history and in the workings of providence in each individual life. Life is about a wonderful opportunity of Gilui Shechina, of God revealing Himself to His creatures. That's the overall goal, to be able to see God in this life. We've spoken about this in the last number of weeks. But then, you know, my friends, you have to do it. Go outside and see the beautiful nature. Go outside and appreciate the stars in the sky. In LA, it's a little bit difficult, but there are nights that you're able to see them. Go outside and be able to experience nature. Be able to make a moral choice that's going to enhance somebody else's life. This is all the ability to see the honor of God. As he continues on the next page, that's why we're all given different characteristics, different aspects of our lives. God created this vast number of unique human beings for His very purpose, to provide so many multifarious facets for the revelation of His glory, Agilui Kvod Shechina. Each moment of time presents for each created being a new opportunity to contribute to divine revelation. No two moments have the same revelation content. He renews the works of creation each day continually, means that every moment of every day is a new world. The purpose of the moment just passed is not the same as the purpose of the present moment. Should a person waste a moment, that portion of revelation is lost to him. On level number one, what does it mean that there's a Gilui Kvod Shechina, that the Shechina is with us? The answer is that we need to understand, according to the first level, Rav Dessler, that the world is about experiencing godliness. The world is about coming through a realization that God is indeed in this world. And not just to sit and contemplate about it, which is the ideal, it has to be brought down into the practical. It has to be brought down in appreciating the world around us. It has to be around by appreciating every moment that's given to us as the ability to connect to God. It has to be through our specific actions of saying, I have the ability of finding God in this world, in nature, in relationships with people. Every time I interact and I create a positive interaction, I'm creating a positive environment of Gilui Kvod Shechina, of the Divine Presence in this world. So Shechina is here. It's a question of finding God, of not getting so caught up in the details that we lose the larger picture, and it's not just focusing on the larger picture that we lose the details. The second approach of how we can find God and access Him in our lives is an idea we've mentioned many times, Rabbi Miller in Shabbat Shirim, who speaks about in 36, very practical, within the individual as well, the same process occurs. There's usually some psychological area of special sensitivity, where God's presence can be most intensely felt. By fully realizing this special consciousness, man can fill himself with awareness of God, radiating outwards from the central point of contact, till the whole earth is filled with His glory. In practical terms, this means that each individual can find for himself some mitzvah, some commandment, to which he feels especially attracted, which holds for him a particular beauty. And on this mitzvah, he can lavish all the stored in devotion, giving it his whole strength and gleaning from it immeasurably more than he gained, an understanding and closeness to God that will permeate his whole life in every aspect. And that's why we have a very strange statement in the Talmud, where Rabbi Nachman said, I'm assured of a place in the world to come because I have fulfilled the commandment of having three meals on the Shabbat. And said Rabbi Yehuda, I'm assured of a place in the world to come because of my devotion and prayer. And the Maharal comments on this and says that this rather surprising confidence of the sages, an indication that in order to lead a full spiritual life, one must have at least one mitzvah that one observes with all one's heart and soul as perfectly as one is able. This is the second way of feeling the Shechina in our life. Finding that mitzvah which really awakens within us a connection with God. And lavishing on that one mitzvah all our strength, all our energy. That's not to mean to discard everything else, but it is to mean that you want to feel the Shechina of God is here. You want to feel it, so work at it. How do you work at it? Be able to take a mitzvah that excites us, invest in it, make something out of it. It's that beautiful model of why the Medrash says in Eliyahu Rabbah, why was Devorah worthy to be a prophetess? So the Medrash says that Devorah said to herself, my husband's an Am Haaretz, he's a simple person. I want him to have some schus, to have some merit, to be able to connect with God. So what did she do? She made him wicks to bring to Shiloh so that people could study Torah, so that there'd be light. And God said, I see that she meant L'shem Shamayim. She meant for the purpose of bringing about a greater amount of godliness in this world, that more people could study, more people could benefit from this light. I am going to reward her by giving her prophecy, by giving her divine inspiration. Such a very, very, very beautiful and powerful medrash. How one individual works so, I'm not saying just doing a mitzvah, but invest one's entire self in that mitzvah, and you see the result is Hashras HaShechina, you see the result is relationship with God. It reminds me, it's a little bit of a lahavdil, a little bit of a distinction, but I think the connection is nonetheless there. Reminds me of an article I read recently from one of the Chicken Soup of the Soul books. It's a very, very interesting article. It was written by somebody involved in the management field. And she spoke about the concept that in life, every person should have a signature in life. Something, you know, when we work in areas where we do things that seem to be so similar to everyone else, so you want to stand out in some way, you want to be unique in some way. So she gave examples of how a pilot would randomly take names of passengers and write them a note and say, thank you for flying with us. Or how a baggage collector, you know, with the airports, you know, putting the bags on the conveyor belt, take them off. And oftentimes you have those tags that get detached from the baggage and they just throw them out. So he would collect all those tags, mail them back to the individual and say thank you for flying United or whatever airline. Every person, she said, should have some type of signature that speaks to them. How someone would send out their business card with a piece of gum in the mail, and that way they know that no one would throw out their mail because they knew to expect gum from them. Whatever it is, it's a signature. So she said that after she gave this seminar, she got a call from one of the supermarkets that, you know, managers that was in this seminar. And he said, you have no idea what you've created in our supermarket. We have a Down syndrome young boy, his name is Johnny, who bags the groceries. So when Johnny heard this idea, he asked his father to come home, at home, to show him how to print out something on the computer. And what Johnny did was to write a thought of the day on the computer and then print out many copies of it. And he would cut it out at night and put it into everyone's bag the next day. And what we have on our hands is a nightmare, because everyone just wants Johnny's line to get the thought of the day. And people are calling up and saying, I used to go shopping once a week, now I come in every day just to buy a couple of apples or milk because I want to see Johnny's thought of the day. This is the power of having some type of signature, something that makes you unique, something that makes you special, that stands out. If this is true, and it's a nice idea to think about in life, I think it's very much true in terms of our relationship with God. What makes us ourselves unique? We're all doing 613 mitzvahs, or however many we can do in our day and age, every individual in their particular cases. But what are we doing that gives us our signature in terms of God? How can we say, this is what makes me special in my relationship with God that stands out from everyone else around me? I think that is what we're talking about, of the concept of accessing the Shekhinah. It's there. You can access it through nature, being able to take every moment of time and using it well. You can really access it through what mitzvahs are about, our connection to God. What is our mitzvah signature that makes us so unique, that makes us so special? That's level one. In the short time we have remaining, let's very briefly do level number two, because I will be quite honest with you. When I read this, it was the Chiddush Gadol. It was a major, major innovative idea. I said to my husband, I'm embarrassed, around 34 years can I inherit on this earth, and I've never seen this idea before. So I have to share it with you. So bear with me for a number of very short moments for the second idea. Says the Medrash in Shemot Rabbah. I felt better because I asked a lot of people over Shabbos if they ever heard of this idea, and they hadn't either. So at least I felt I was in good company. Says the Medrash, 41. V'sha'ah shamar lo kadosh baruch hu l'moshe she'yaseh mishkan. When God said to Moshe, make the mishkan. Miyad, immediately, vayaveh kol ish, everyone bore things. Lakama yamim heviu kol nedava, how many days did they bring us? Rabbi Yochanan said, l'shnei b'karim heviu v'oter. 2 mornings, that was enough. They had all the material they needed and extra. As the verse says, v'mlachai tadayam, and there was sufficient, there was enough. Nichnas Moshe to Bitzalo, ra'asho termina mishka. The Moshe went to Bitzalo, and he saw that they had more stuff than they needed to build the sanctuary. Amar lifnei kadosh baruch hu, so therefore Moshe said to God, Ribon ha'olam, master of the world, asinu milecha mishkan, we built the mishkan, v'hotarnu, and you know what? We have scraps, we have left over, a lot left over. Ma na'aseh b'notar, what should we do? Because it was consecrated for what? For the temple, for the tabernacle. What should we do with that which is left over? Amar lo, so kadosh baruch hu said to him, lech v'aseh bahem mishkan la'idut. Make a mishkan, a tabernacle, la'edut, for the testimony. Our verse, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan La'edut. There are 2 mishkans going on here, my friends. The mishkan that we talk about, the tabernacle where we serve God, and then there's a mishkan ha'edut, the mishkan for the law. Halach Moshe v'asabahem. And Moshe went and did them. And that's why the verse says, Eile Pekudei HaMishkan, Mishkan La'edut. What the Medrash is telling us, again, what Moshe Shapiro Mimamakim, is that there were 2 different and distinct structures that were built. One is the Mishkan that we are familiar with, and the second one was done in the exact measurements But it was a place for Mishkan HaEdos, it was a place to learn Torah. It was a place that the people gathered in order to study. And that's why when we have the verse in Bamidbar, how he gathered the 70 elders around the Ohel, around the tent, what tent are we talking about? The tent of learning. As he says so beautifully, you had the 70 elders that were parallel to the Klei HaMikdash, parallel to the vessels of the temple. There were 30 in the northern side, parallel to the Shulchan. And there were 30 in the southern side, parallel to the menorah. And 10 in the eastern side, parallel to the Mizbeach, to the inner altar. And Moshe, who was the greatest among them all, the 71st, was in the western side, parallel to the Aron, parallel to the Kodesh Kodashim. So the physical structure of how they stood was in measurement to what the Mishkan looked like. This is a very important idea. Because what this is saying is, although the physical Mishkan may be destroyed, Eile Pekudeya Mishkan, Mishkan Eidos, there is one Mishkan which will never be destroyed. And that's the concept of Mishkan HaEdos, the Mishkan of learning Torah. This is something that will be with us forever. As the Birkas Avraham, the Slonimah Rebbe, says so beautifully, he says, the temple was a place where you clearly saw God. And now that we don't have the temple, what are we left with? So he says in 46, we're left with the Torah. And this is the Mishkan HaEdos, this is the tabernacle of the Eidos, that God is still among us. There were two tabernacles, my friends. Yes, we may not have that physical place to serve God, but the Mishkan HaEdos, the tabernacle of the learning of the Torah, that is with us at all times in history. And it's Shemikoach HaTorah, it's through the strength of the Torah, Ro'eh Yehudi Shashem Yisparach Nimsa Ito, that's how you can access the Shechina. And they quote such a very, very poignant Tanan Debe Eliyahu, the asterisk in 43, says the Birkas Avraham, Kol Tamid Chacham, any scholar, Sheyoshev V'Koreh V'Shoneh, who sits and learns, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yoshev K'negdo, God sits in front of him, V'Koreh V'Shoneh Imo, and learns with him. And that's what we have to do. When we learn Torah, it has to be Ayidei Or HaTorah HaMesamechet Leiv V'Nefesh Yargish Hashem Imo V'Chol HaMatzavim. To be able to take the experiencing of learning Torah as an experiencing of meeting God, and be able to transfer that into all areas of our lives. And this is again, the two Mishkans are the two aspects of the Shechina, through Avoda, through the service of God, and through the learning of Torah. And again, it's the concept of Pekudei HaMishkan. It takes effort. It takes diligence. It takes concerted effort that we have a relationship in learning, that we feel the Shechina of God, that we feel the Divine Presence. That we focus so much on the details of the Mishkan to tell you that it's not only the Mishkan that we understand it to be, there's a much deeper Mishkan going on here. The second Mishkan being built, the Mishkan HaEdos, it's the Mishkan of Torah, which is with us forever. And I think that this is really our challenge. Our challenge is to be able to make Torah learning experience an experience where we're learning and you feel God learning with you. That learning of Torah has to be a spiritual experience that we feel the Shechina, we feel the Divine Presence. With this, I'd like to quote a small number of selections from Rav Soloveitchik in the book Shirei HaRav on the love of Torah, where he says in 49, the Jew unceasingly seeks and craves Kedusha, sanctity, and Torah. The Ramban explains that the preface to the Shir Shal Yom is always, today is the first day, second day in the Shabbat cycle, because the Jew counts each day with longing, anxiously awaiting the arrival of Shabbat. It's the Sfiras Homer, where we're anxiously awaiting receiving the Torah. It's Tosefes Shabbat, adding time to Shabbat, ushering in the Shabbat some small time before its obligatory commencement, exemplifies the Jew's impatient yearning for Kedusha. We all have this, whether we're conscious of it or not. And it's built into the Jewish cycle that we yearn, we desire for holiness. This search for Kedusha is really a search for God. So then he says how we can find this search in learning. Let's listen so beautifully in 50. In a certain sense, what holiness is for the Jew, Torah is for the Talmid Chacham, for the scholar. Torah should not just be an intellectual pastime. True, one can enjoy the intellectual creativity involved in Talmud Torah. The Talmud Torah should be an emotional experience as well. One should feel a tremor when engaged in it. The Torah should be seen not just as a book, but as a living personality, a queen like the Shabbos Malchusa, with whom one can establish an eye-to-eye relationship. The story of the Torah should be a dialogue, not only a monologue. And he says, to be a lambda, to be one who's involved in learning, requires hasmada, constant diligence, and inquisitiveness and curiosity. If I love someone, I am inquisitive. I am interested in him and in his plans. If I were asked how an emotional experience can be had through studying the laws, for instance, of monetary fines and damages, I would say that it's true that the exterior of Torah is formal and abstract, but behind the shell of conceptual abstractions is a great fire burning, giving warmth and love, and one can love the Torah in turn with great passion. When you apprehend the Torah as a personality, not just as a book, it infiltrates your emotional as well as your intellectual life. Reminds me very briefly of the story I heard 2 weeks ago at a Shabbos table of how Rabbi Foyer, Rav Gifter from the Tel's Rosh Yeshiva's son-in-law, was speaking to eye doctors, and they were speaking about how we know the Torah tells us by tefillin that it should be l'totafot b'neinecha, should be between your eyes. So you would think, like the Karaites do, they put it right between your eyes. We don't do that. We put the tefillin, the men put the tefillin on the top of their head. It's always a question. If Bene Necha means between your eyes, so then why are we putting it on top of your head? So this eye doctor was talking and saying that the optic nerve where the two eyes meet is right here on top of your head. So it's really Bene Necha between your eyes. So Rabbi Foyer told this to his father-in-law, Rav Gifter. When he told his father, Rav Gifter started beaming, and he got up and he started dancing. He said, for words of Torah like this, it's worth having a dance. This is what we're speaking about, that it's not just an intellectual experience of learning. Learning has to be an emotional experience. It has to carry us to a point that we're willing to dance over learning Torah, that it excites us. And I think, my friends, this is the key. Yes, we have read about the Mishkan for 5 parshios, Truma, Tetzaveh, Kitisa, Vayakel, Pekuta. We say enough. No, we missed the whole point. The whole point is Mishkan Ha'edros. The whole point is that it's aligned, that the Torah is aligned, that when we learn the parshios about the Mishkan, it's not just a question of I heard this already. Enough is enough. No, we missed the whole point. It's aligned and well. The experience of Torah is not just an intellectual experience of knowledge. I've heard this already. I've seen this already. It's an experience of an emotional experience where you want to learn more. You want to gain more. It's almost like within these parshios, this is the challenge which God is telling us. The Mishkan is not just a physical structure. The Mishkan represents an opportunity of closeness between God and man. It's the Mishkan Ha'edos. It's the Mishkan of the Torah itself, where the Torah has to be alive. It has to be vibrant. It has to be an experience that's really going to move us. And that's our challenge when we're learning these parshios. Not to say, oh, I've heard this already, but in any relationship, and I think what the Rav is saying is so beautiful, when you love someone, you're inquisitive, you're interested, and you'll listen to it, and you'll gain more from it, and you'll deepen your appreciation and love with the person. And I think that's our challenge. Our challenge is to awaken ourselves up to the learning of Torah experience, to be an exciting experience, to see beyond the paper and pen, so to speak, beyond the letters of the Sefer Torah, and see what message is it trying to communicate to me that will be able to feel the fiber and the emotion of Torah. So therefore, in summary, the repetition in our pasuk of the Mishkan Ha'edus, that's teaching us 2 things, and that's why it's repeated in our pasuk. There is 1 building called the physical Mishkan. But then there's the Mishkan Ha'edus, it's a much deeper aspect of the first Mishkan, and that this Mishkan is Ha'edus, it's the Shechina, it's everlasting, and it will be with us forever. That's the Mashkon playing on Rashi, that's the collateral God leaves with us, that He'll never leave us. The Mishkan is a Mishkan Ha'edus, it's Atzei Shitim Omdim, when we go off the path, God is still there, He is with us at all times. And the second level, the Mishkan Ha'edus, there are 2 Mishkans here, my friends. There's a physical building, and then there's a sanctuary of learning, a separate building that was constructed. the focus on Pekudei, the details, why we have a whole parsha on the details. It's the importance of details in life. You need to see the overall structure, but you need to access it within details and bring it back to the overall structure. And the details also teach us the importance of diligence in learning Torah. It has to be working at it. It has to be a smother. You have to put your all into it. And perhaps the most important question of why the emphasis, what is the parshios coming to teach us? It's coming to teach us how we can access the Shechina, access the Divine Presence, the end of the parsha. It's the elevation of the every moment. It's investing one particular mitzvah, our signature, and it's experiencing, underlining the concept of experiencing, learning of the Torah, that should be an alive experience, a very powerful emotional experience between ourselves and God.